Ladies and gentlemen, brace yourselves for the truth that the gangster computer god conspiracy does not want you to hear. We are in the midst of a global struggle, a battle for economic freedom, spearheaded by none other than Ray Youssef, the indomitable CEO of No One's. He is the fearless champion of peer-to-peer crypto trading in the global south, the last bastion of hope against the tyrannical forces of financial apartheid. And guess what? Ray Youssef is our guest on episode 9 of the Outlaw Crypto Podcast, bringing the fire of revolution to our very ears. No One's is not just an app. It is the ultimate weapon in our fight for liberty. Imagine a financial communication super app that connects the people of the global south to the global conversation and the world's financial system. Ray Youssef has engineered this masterpiece to empower us, to free us from the iron grip of the digital overlords. With No One's, trade various forms of payment and make peer-to-peer payments. This is how we dismantle the gangster computer god stranglehold on our financial existence. The gangster computer god and its minions have made Bitcoin transactions untenable, forcing our people to flee to alternatives like USDT on the Tron blockchain. But Ray sees through their machinations. He fights back, leading us toward a peer-to-peer economic system that promises true financial freedom. Ray Youssef and his comrades Nicholas Gregory and Antoine Riard bring us CivKit, the revolutionary peer-to-peer electronic market system. Built on the Nostr protocol and Bitcoin's Lightning Network, CivKit is a direct assault on the centralized control of the gangster computer god. It's a marketplace where censorship is impossible and tyranny has no foothold. This is where peer-to-peer trading thrives, where the true power of the global south is unleashed. Imagine a permissionless and censorship-resistant trading environment where public and private key cryptography safeguards every transaction. We are creating a parallel economy, a free market that stands as a fortress against the tyranny of the gangster computer god. Join the revolution. Embrace No One's and CivKit, the tools of our liberation. Stand with Ray Youssef as he paves the way to a future where we control our own financial destiny, free from censorship, surveillance, and control. The battle for economic freedom is here, and together we shall overcome.
All right, we're here with another episode of the Outlaw Crypto Podcast. I'm your host, Paranoia Machinery. This is a podcasting 2.0 podcast, which means that you can support the podcast through value for value, meaning that you can stream sats on the Fountain app, you can do boosts for sats, and then we also accept Monero and a variety of other privacy coins if you want to support the show. Details are in the description. Today, my guest is Ray Youssef from No One's, and he is pioneering peer-to-peer trading in the global south. And it's actually been quite controversial, which is kind of funny to me considering the mentality that Bitcoiners have right now. Ray, how are you, man? Thanks for coming on the show.
I'm great, brother. It's always a pleasure to be here to talk to people who are actually interested in serving the global south and understanding their needs. It's important to educate the whole community about this.
As I understand it, you just were in Africa on the ground, boots on the ground. Well, it's a pleasure to have you on, man. Increasing adoption in peer-to-peer trading. Do you want to tell us about your recent trip?
Oh, yeah, bro. Careful what you wish for, my good man. I could talk for an hour about this trip. I didn't want to leave. Right. We were there only for about 6 days, but the energy was electric as we were leaving. The last 4 days were insane. It was literally 10 interviews a day, national TV, state TV, radio, and I went to the main university of Nairobi and gave several presentations there, one for coders, and one for the students at large, which I really enjoyed. I always loved, you know, getting up on stage in Africa and talking to the students, because what you learn is amazing. You know, and what you see from people is amazing. People there are really ready to move ahead with their lives, and they're just looking for a path. But, you know, it's very interesting when you talk about crypto in Africa. I did a campus tour in 2019, a total of 8 universities, 4 in South Africa, 4 in Kenya. And I'm just beginning a small campus tour here, about to do a massive one soon, coming summer. But my goodness, when you first mentioned crypto on stage, you see the way people look at you. And I was like, why are they looking at that? Even Bitcoin. Mention Bitcoin, people look at you. And it's because, you know, I figured it out by just talking to people. Why are you all looking at me like that when you say Bitcoin or crypto? It's because everyone in Africa has either been scammed or knows someone that's been scammed. And that's a horror story involving crypto. And it's usually some MLM. And of course, they would ask for crypto as a successful payment. And or some crypto mining scam or whatever. Someone on Telegram says, you know, send me this here, that man in the middle attacks. There's a lot of issues in Africa with fraud. And Africans always get, you know, preyed upon in all these scams at one point. Remember that? It was Africa that took the biggest hit there. People were literally selling the family farm. So I shifted the conversation. But first, I, you know, told them, hey, you have every right to be skeptical. Anyone coming up here and talking about Bitcoin or crypto, I understand what's going on. You should be skeptical. But I have something else to tell you. I'm not asking you to buy anything. I'm not asking you to invest in a family farm and wait a year and get rich. This is different. This is using crypto, Bitcoin's means of exchange as kind of a universal translator for all forms of fiat, whether they be cash, a bank account, mobile money, wallet, a gift card in any currency, you can turn it into any other payment method anywhere else in the world, in any other, as long as liquidity suffices. And that's how you do it. This listing service, you can see all this amazing liquidity and this escrow, which is the payment with a condition. So you leaves know one guy has a crypto, you can send the fiat first and the deal is done. We even have a disputes process in case you get into trouble. And then I keep telling them, I give them examples. This is how it works. You can start your own little version of Western Union. You can send money to the country next door a lot cheaper and a lot faster because, you know, remittances within Africa cost anywhere from 3 to 5 times as much as outside of Africa. Can you imagine that? It costs more to send money to the country next door within Africa than it does to send from the UK into Africa. It is insane. And
why is only, that? Is that like from a lack of infrastructure or something? Like, why does it cost so much to send it so close?
Yeah, that, you know, when I first came to all, those Africans have bad technology, you know, but no, it's not that at all, bro. The Africans had M-Pesa before PayPal, which is really the forerunner mobile wallet in the world. 98% of Kenyans use it. It's an amazing payment system. However, I was like shocked to learn that not only, it's not just the banks that are completely broken, you know, the fake state in the 54 states of Africa. It's also the mobile money. You cannot send mobile money from an MPC user in Kenya to an MPC user in Ghana, even though the country, the wallet has, you know, a presence in both nations. It's like, why is that? That's crazy. And there's a that name for it. It is, and it gets even worse. I call this financial apartheid, right? Like, this is something that must be imposed on Africa through overregulations. Overregulations, Africa's the most overregulated in the entire world. And then I started telling, you know, people this, and I'm like, oh, right now, you're just a conspiracy theorist, and you just, they can't get their shit together. I was like, okay, fine, let's. Now, guess what happened? So Binance, on Binance P2P, which, you know, CZ copied from me, which is great, did a good job. Binance P2P, the Kenyans used to be able to trade with all of Africa. But just recently, if you're a Binance P2P trader in Kenya, you can only trade with Kenya. You can't trade with Nigeria, you can't trade with Uganda, you can't trade with any other country in Africa. And the same goes for every other country. What happened? Man, I wasn't just a conspiracy theorist, I was right. Binance got a U.S. compliance monitor, and literally, I know this from the inside, one of the first things they said is, hey, you need to segregate all these African nations with each other. They can't trade with each other, especially on peer-to-peer, My goodness, that just shows they applied the financial apartheid template, not just to the banks, not just to the telcos and the money wallets, but even to the peer-to-peer exchanges using crypto. Uncle Sam does not want Africans to trade with each other. African continental trade is less than 1%, bro. European continental trade is 70%. Asia 60%, America's 45% United States. Latin America's 30%. Africa's officially at 13% on the books, but it's actually a lot less than that. You can't purely African-owned companies. So my crazy.
Why are they so threatened by people in Africa trading with their neighbors?
Well, you know, I asked myself the same question. I was like, oh my goodness, what's the problem here? And if, you know, so this is where you have to kind of put on your Mr. Barron's tinfoil hat, or just think from a business perspective. You've got a continent of 1.4 billion humans, with literally the vast majority of all the world's natural resources. Pretty much every country in Africa is almost self-sufficient, right? And and you've also got 70% of the world's population growth. Think about that for a minute. If these people, like, as a business person, it's very simple what creates wealth. It's trade. If these people could actually trade with each other, Africa would become a superpower in less than a decade. You know how I know that? It's simple. Imagine I come to you and I say, hey, man, you running your business over here? Cool. What if there was a way you could 10x your business? What if there's a way all of the business people in Africa could 10x their business? There is. Just let them trade with each other. Because then the Kenyan merchant can actually get customers from Malawi, from Uganda, from Nigeria, from Egypt, from Ethiopia, from Zambia, Zimbabwe, everywhere. They would more than 10x their business. But they can't, because they can't accept payments. If you want to keep a country strangled, just keep them segregated in just little financial prisons. Like, if you want to do that to America, it's simple. Hey, you know, wipe out the one currency. Every state has their own currency with huge capital controls. Don't let you make it a nightmare for New Yorkers to send money to New Jersey or for Californians to send money to Nevada and vice versa. And there you have it. The whole of the United States would turn into a third world country. And that's what they've done.
That's so crazy.
Well, that's business as usual, bro. The West is expanding, the black man getting on his feet, being able to trade. So they see the energy. They know the energy there. Just recently, while I was on the trip to Kenya, some American diplomat came over, some fat white lady, and she was like, oh, yeah, Kenya, you're awesome. We want to trade with you. Let's open up bilateral trade. And all Kenya's like, oh, this is good. And I was like, oh, damn. They're targeting these people down. They don't want them to get off the ground. They're going to use this to screw them over in the worst possible way. They don't want Africans to trade with each other. They don't want Africans to get rich. They know what happens if they open up pan-continental African trade. You're going to have cities like Dubai popping up all over Africa. Everyone's business is going to 10x. Can you imagine opening up a market of 1.4 billion people to 1.4 billion people? The exponential growth that would occur within less than 4 years, Africa would be a completely different place. And within 10 years, you'd see cities like Dubai popping up all over the place. They'd be able to select cities like Dubai all around Africa. That's what they're afraid of. And then they won't be able to go in there and swipe all those natural resources for nothing. Because the people would be like, hey, the people would be like, enough is enough. And the colonial clerks would be ejected. It was the only reason those colonial clerks take orders from the West, because their money is not in Africa. It's in London, Paris, New York. And once, you know, even these colonial clerks, wait a minute, there's way more money flowing around inside of here. I don't need to take these handouts and crumbs from the West. Let me help my people. They know that would happen. So they don't want that to happen. They don't want Africa to get on its feet. And that's the truth, man. If they did it in banks, did it in mobile wallets, and now they're even doing it to crypto P2P exchanges, it's clear as a heart attack, right?
Yeah, it's insane the war that they're having on P2P. I mean, like, when we spoke before, you were telling me that, like, you can't even go to Nigeria. Nigeria has, like, arrested people from other companies simply for facilitating P2P. And to me, like, that's, I guess, as a Westerner, somebody that's outside of Africa, that is so alien to me that, like, they would erect these barriers to trade to stop people from, you know, selling their crypto back and forth to each other. It's just insane.
Yeah, because they don't tell us that stuff. They don't tell us, hey, it's been a concentrated effort over the past 70 years to make sure that all the black, brown, and yellow people cannot trade with each other, especially those black people. And then they just tell us, oh, yeah, you know, they're just lazy. So, like, we only think of Africa as poverty. It's corruption. But, you know, it just continues. And, you know, Nigeria is another great example. The IMF just came out and said, hey, Nigeria, we suggest you regulate cryptocurrency. And you know they're telling them exactly what to do. So, again, the colonial clerks are following suit. It's all coming from all the corruption in Africa, all the overregulation, all the handicaps comes from the West. It literally is a conspiracy, man. They're just conspiring to make sure these people can't trade. So stay poor, and you don't even know why. Like, no one tells you Africa's moved so greatly in the world. The continent, the states of Africa can't even trade with each other. Commerce is the key to fixing the world. You know, it's all about commerce. Like, that's why Bitcoin was invented. To allow people to trade with each other. Freedom money. So the money can move around. Money's supposed to be liquid. So, okay, we don't have that anymore. Now Bitcoin is a store of value. Okay, fine. We're going to do it all later, what? Now Tether has taken over that. Unfortunately, Tether's not permissionless yet, right? But it works.
Yeah.
Borderless. So it's doing the job. That's why the Global South is, you know, into it with such a vengeance, because people are tired of being imprisoned within their borders. And they're even more tired of their money being imprisoned within their borders, the ones that understand just how damaging that is.
So in your experience with No Ones, would you say that Tether is like the largest volume asset that's trading on your exchange? Or like what are people actually using on the ground in Africa?
So on No Ones, actually 80% of the marketplace trades for Bitcoin.
Oh, really?
And 20% is Tether. Yeah, yeah. In Binance P2P, it's the exact opposite. 99.9% Tether, maybe 1% Bitcoin.
And do you have any insight into why No Ones is predominantly Bitcoin?
Yeah, because our community that I cultivated in Africa, I'm a Bitcoin maxi, so I pushed Bitcoin so hard, I educated people about Bitcoin so hard. So people just love Bitcoin over there, especially Nigeria. Wherever I touch, I pass the Bitcoin virus, you know, in a big way. So it's still predominantly Bitcoin, but Tether is growing. You know, the more we bring on all of these peer refugees from Binance and OKX, where it's mostly Tether, the more Tether will grow. And I think eventually Tether will eat about all of it. It's mostly in-person trades or off escrow trades. So eventually Tether will grow to keep that all up. But for my money, still try to push people towards Bitcoin, but in the streets of the mind of their own.
I know there's a ton of different places in Africa, so this is kind of a general question. I don't know if it really applies because you mentioned there's like 54 different countries. What are the currencies like in Africa? Are they having like hyperinflationary currency crises where they need to like seek a store of value like Bitcoin, or are their currencies stable? Like generally, like what's that situation like?
Situation is pretty insane, actually. In Nigeria, you have 5% inflation every day. Massive inflation.
Every day?
Every day. Every day, bro.
Okay, that's like Venezuela-style inflation.
Oh, yeah, that's where it's going. Why do you think the government freaked out so much? Especially when after all these peer-to-peer traders, they're like, damn, something's going on. We have to stop the free market, because otherwise our currency will go into the nosedive. People can actually trade freely. And that's what they did.
That's crazy.
They just tried to shut it all down. Egypt, where I was born, lost 60% of the value of its currency in a single day, like a month ago. Can you imagine that? Imagine losing 60% of your life savings just like that. And it's not because the Egyptians
And then blocking off the exit so you can't even escape from that.
Yeah, exactly. That's what the local governments do to keep the foreign, the hard money, the dollars and euros in their, you know, on their ledger. They don't want to let their people access that. No, that's like for us, buying weapons, medical supplies, penthouses in Miami, whatever it is, right?
Yeah.
And that's what happens, bro. Like, they are literally cornered off from every side and use the money system to control them. The only way around this P2P is literally the only way. And that's why education is so important, because educating people about P2P is extremely difficult. Extremely difficult. but it has to be done. And the good news is there's already a small army of traders. Like, I got back from Kenya. Within a few short months, our volume in Kenya went up to $3.5 million every day in trade volume in Kenyan shillings. Amazing. And a small army of these young P2P traders drove 8 hours. These guys,
I saw you post about that.
Yeah, they were 19 to 26 young guys that are now moving millions every month. Literally, between the whole bunch of these guys, they were like 10 to 20 million a month in volume. Can you imagine? Just on their cell phones, not even laptops, none of that. They're just trading. And they're earning a great living. They drove down some nice cars. And, you know, they're moving that money around within Kenya, from Kenya to Malawi, from Zambia to Zimbabwe. They're finding ways to make corridors happen. And when you create corridors between countries, that creates wealth in and of itself. Because there's a huge problem in Africa with just simple merchants, right? Every merchant in Africa buys stuff to sell. And most of the stuff you buy is not made in Africa. It's made in China, just like everyone else, right? But it's extremely difficult for them to send with their bank accounts. It'll take 4 days if you even have the right to do it. If you've got the right kind of domicile account and all this and all that. So most merchants, they can't. They're just working with cash. So how are they going to buy those sneakers from Shenzhen? Sell. Well, here comes crypto. All those Chinese factories accept Tether. And they say, here, just send to our Tether address if you don't have a bank account or Alipay or whatever, JetPay. And the African merchant's like, oh, now I need to get Tether. And they're looking around, see how they can exchange their paper money for Tether so they can continue their business. So there's huge OTC trade there on the street. Now, when you tell, you know, any American regulator about this, they scream money laundering. And to me, it's like, my goodness, it's like such a racist thing to say. This is clean money. This guy is making his money selling sneakers. Now he wants to buy more sneakers. And because, you know, if it does manage to work, it takes a
Yeah, that you exclude him from.
Exactly. And you're calling him a money launderer? And you're calling the peer-to-peer traders that are trying to help these people money launderers? Yes, I was under the impression that money laundering, money had to actually be dirty or derived from criminal means. But no, they use that expression to describe any outside of the official golden circle of Western finance. Isn't that disgusting? Isn't that supremacist?
It is. And I believe that, like, Westerners are getting their first taste of this right now, like with these crackdowns on the crypto industry that we've been seeing, because they're referring to things like Samurai Wallet, which was a non-custodial thing that just facilitated people to make, you know, shared transactions to CoinJoin as money laundering when they never controlled anybody's money. The users themselves were choosing to do this. And now this is getting the arbitrary definition of money laundering. So we're seeing this, like, attitude kind of creep into Western civilization right now as well. Would you agree?
100%, bro. 100%. I mean, they came out, basically, look, what happened just recently with this new guidance, if you can call it that, that, hey, every Bitcoin wallet is essentially a possible money transmitter. Think about what that means. Yeah, this is not the SEC talking. The SEC will come at you some fines. It's the DOJ talking. This is a possible indictment on criminal charges, felonies. Punishable about up to 20 years in prison or more. Every single person has a Bitcoin wallet, the DOJ is now looking at. That's what they said. It's going to declare war against people. And people don't understand that. It still hasn't set in. But I knew this was going to happen. Records already was happening 6 years ago. Local Bitcoins, you know, the predecessor to P2P, had 50 of their traders got arrested. One guy's case was really interesting. His name is Mark. He's on Twitter. He just sold $1,000 worth of Bitcoin to a guy and had the guy pay him by sending some money to his wife's bank account. They tried to get him and his wife for 35 years. He claimed, oh yeah, somewhere down the line, you know, there was some lottery fraud, and oh yeah, you don't have an MTL in every state. But this guy even had an MSP license, a federal license. He did 18 months in a correctional facility. They tried to get him and his wife, who have two children together, in jail for 5 years each. That was what. So this is what you're dealing with. You're dealing with gangsters that want to kidnap you and destroy your life for absolutely nothing. And they'll make up whatever. They can indict a ham sandwich. This is what they said. This is what we're facing right now. And we're not taking it seriously enough. You know, 2 years ago, I said that Bitcoin had no future in the U.S. Everyone laughed. They said, oh, you just overreacted again. Well, now it's coming to bear. You're starting to see it. At least they put out the warning, shot across the bow. You're going to start to see mass threats. It's absolutely happening. I'm always like, you know, 10 years ahead of the game, honestly. So I see things, not because I'm smarter than anyone else, just because I pay attention to the streets, it's on the ground, and peer-to-peer is the best information. If you actually talk to people, you understand how they're trading manually. It's not just wash trading tokens on an exchange between bots, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's actual economic use.
100%, bro. I've been right about all these things because I'm actually getting my information from the streets, and it's going to get far worse than anyone can imagine. So Bitcoin really doesn't have a future in the U.S., at least not in the form that we think it is. It'll be buried in bank vaults under various KYC and AML. Self-custody will be open. And essentially become a paper asset to control it. Yeah. You think about most of the Bitcoin ETF funds have, it's all paper.
And yeah, yesterday it just broke that Coinbase is like lending the BlackRock, I think it's called iShares, their ETF for Bitcoin. Like they're lending them as much Bitcoin as they need, like paper Bitcoin, like off-chain, in order for them to like short the market or like long the market or whatever. But basically, yeah, paper Bitcoin is here. It's already being used in the ETFs. And I expect that trend to continue just like it has in the precious metal markets, where there's like 200 paper ounces of gold for every physical ounce, or there's like 300 ounces of silver on paper for every physical ounce. We may see like 300 Bitcoin for every actual Bitcoin on paper.
Exactly. Look, so let's see if we can, let's follow the logic trail. So, you know, when the ETF first broke out, I started telling everyone this is a massive trap. They're going to use paper Bitcoin to manipulate the market, just like they do with silver. Silver, you know, with paper silver is traded 200 times. Gold, it's 100 times, 100x. So what does that tell a smart person? That tells us that, the Maxis and the Clopas will be like, oh, but only BlackRock only controls 3% of the trade. I'm like, whoa, 3%? Bro, all they need to do is control half of 1% of the trade. And if they have all this ability to just shuffle around paper, they can literally pump or dump the market at will. You've given them 6 times more leverage than they actually need. Sitting the instruments available to them. A smart person would look at the situation, look at what they've been doing to gold and silver for the past 7 years, and be like, oh my goodness, we just gave them the cake. We're literally at their mercy right now. That's what a smart person does. And when the time comes, they're going to do whatever they want. They're not going to be nice. Stupid person would think, a cultist, would just say, oh, well, they only control 3% of the supply. They wouldn't shoot themselves and in their investors' foot. Well, we shall see.
I think that's extremely naive, to be honest. Like, with what they've done with gold and silver, and then, like, they wouldn't shoot their investors in the foot. Like, they make money whether the price goes up or down on fees, so it doesn't matter if their investors are making money or not. They're still going to make money.
They're more, yeah, exactly. I mean, people just don't get it. They literally are sticking their heads in the sand. As long as the number goes up, hey, my sailor's buying Bitcoin. Hey, BlackRock's buying Bitcoin. Not really. Hey, Tether's buying Bitcoin. We'll get 100K Bitcoin soon. We'll just be a little bit better off than anyone else, even though we completely hand it over, you know, Thanksgiving turkey to them. You know, they'll let us have a little bit more than everyone else. And we're okay with that. And that's basically our current situation. Don't mean to be a Debbie Downer, but facts are facts, and it is what it
You've been catching a lot of shit for that too, like for speaking honestly about your firsthand experience dealing with P2P traders all around the world. It's been very unpopular among Bitcoiners to see the realities of how people are actually using Bitcoin in the real world. Why do you think that is?
Well, Bitcoin has been captured by a bunch of like a small sect of cultists pretending to be Maxis. And they're just attacking everyone that injects any reality into the situation. And you have to understand that crypto Twitter is just a hellhole of bots, trolls, and morons. And most of the plebs are not on Twitter. They don't know what's on it after. So when I say this truth, you know, some smart people will say, oh, yeah, you're right. Oh, my goodness, what's happened? But they're dwarfed by the army of trolls that create so much noise. And these trolls, most of them are paid. In fact, all of them are paid. It's far worse than you can imagine. So I just said, you know what? Okay, this is not working. You're not going to be able to dislodge this narrative they have on Bitcoin right now unless something catastrophic happens, which it will. And then we'll see where it goes from there. But basically, if you want to build out Bitcoin as fiat money, of course, you'll have to focus on medium of exchange. Of course, you'll have to focus on peer-to-peer and self-custody. It's not going to happen on the L1. Maybe it'll happen on the L2, but that same cult, that same faction within will stymie and retard any efforts to push things, because you're going to need, you know, things on the L1 to make these L2s feasible. Otherwise, just like you might need covenants, for example. Let's see how we can get covenants and we can share UTXOs. Basically, like, you know, we work for the Bitcoin addresses or UTXOs, actually. Let's see if we get
personally, that. I'm very distrustful of that. Like, I'm very distrustful of covenants because, like, if they can add spending conditions to your Bitcoin, like, okay, yeah, great. Like, we can make it better for, like, people to use P2P. But the powers that be, like Wall Street, like these people that are currently trying to co-opt Bitcoin, can also use covenants to impose spending conditions. Like, you can only spend this UTXO if it's been KYC'd or if it's been taxed, or, you know, like the way that covenants can improve Bitcoin can also be used to restrict and control the way you can use your Bitcoin.
Yeah, that's a good point. Not really, because they can do all that shit now through all their other enforcement methods. So if it's a tool that can help us niche programmers actually build out a medium of exchange on Bitcoin as an L2 or an L3 like Sifkit, then yeah, let's take that power. So they're already doing all that shit anyway through conventional means. You know, giving them, you know, more programmable functionality to impose on their little ant farm, they already have that power. So if we're giving them, you know, power they already have, but the good guys have it, can use this tool to scale this thing up, then I say we take that. I mean, it's a game of warfare, right? Like,
yeah,
you can't argue on the merits or demerits of technology alone. You have to actually argue it along two vectors. How is it going to empower the bad guys? How much is it going to empower the good guys? And Covenants wins out on the good guy empowerment, especially how way we want to use it. So I say go for it. But see, they already have us in a headlock anyway.
Okay. And like in your experience with No Ones, like these African traders, are they trading mostly on chain or are they using Lightning because it's cheaper and they can afford the fees on Lightning better than like the on chain fees? Like what's this trading look like?
Simple. Someone wants to say get some money sent home to them. Normally, it happens to Western Union. Uncle Phil in Pasadena, California, will go to the Western Union office and send you money. Say he sends $100. You're going to get, you know, he'll pay a fee on the inside, of course. The $100 goes to you. Western Union looks, okay, we got $100. Like our Pasadena, California. Well, we're going to have to give him Naira from our Lagos location, according to the official price of the Naira dollar, which is means you'll get half as much Naira as you would according to the street price, what they call the black or free market. So if you're getting money through Western Union in Nigeria, let's say, you're only going to get half as much Naira as you would have gotten for those same dollars on the street market, which is why a lot of these Nigerians would be like, yeah, send me the gift. Don't do what you mean. Just buy a gift card, shop, scratch off the back, pay for it in cash, send me a picture of the receipt. And then you'll just go around a peer to peer platform, this guy in Nigeria, sell that gift card code, someone in China or Europe. I'd often a huge discount. You can give him up to a 50% discount, and he'll just have cut where he was before with Western Union. And his relative won't have to pay the $20, and he'll have access to Bitcoin right away. And he'll be able to sell the Bitcoin to the guy next door and say, hey, just do you want to pay me for this Bitcoin? I'll charge you another 5% above market, scarce in the global south, and just pay me with an instant bank transfer from your bank account to mine. So even if he's giving up 50% of the gift card, he can give up, you know, he's still coming out ahead. But it's not just gift cards, so support 500, meaning bank transfer, cash, you know, about, I think, over 100 mobile money carriers around. Some exotic payment methods like in-game purchases. Basically, anyone can trade anything out there to crypto. And it actually is a payment, a universal translator for money, for payments, and a transporter for payments, all in one. It allows traders to leverage arbitrage. Some people go onto a peer-to-peer marketplace and just put up one offer saying, hey, I'll buy your USDT at 1% of your market. And some people will take that, but just want to cash out real quick. Right. Then he'll turn around and put up, you know, just like dropship or something, up an offer to buy something for cheap, and then put up another offer to sell it more expensively right on eBay. And people are just having the original guy who had the product, ship it over to the new guy, they're just the middle person. People do the same thing with money on peer-to-peer marketplaces. And it's much more lucrative, much more fluid, and allows them to, you know, the average African student can make $1,000 a month just doing that. Like 5 hours out of every week. The truly keen ones will look at that and scale it up and build their own little versions of Western Union or PayPal for specific corridors. And they'll literally become millionaires from that. Every time I, you know, travel anywhere, I meet at least double digit people that thank me for changing their lives.
That's incredible. So, like, I've always seen these like Uber gift cards or like Google gift cards. Like I've always seen these guys like with Uber gift cards for like half price or like Google Play gift cards for half price, right? On these peer-to-peer exchanges. And I've always wondered how they were able to do that. But it's because even by selling it at half price, they're still making more than the official exchange rate for Naira that the government would offer you, like going through the official channel of like Western Union and a bank or whatever.
And they get it right away. They don't have to go to some office, you know, out. And, you know, it takes 2 days to clear, by the way, in Africa. So you don't even get it right away. You might get robbed at the Western Union office. And then you have to take this cash and spend that. And with peer-to-peer, you just get them. Boom, you turn a gift card bought with USD in California into a Nigerian bank transfer in Naira. Just with two peer-to-peer trades. That's the power of peer-to-peer. You can literally turn any payment method in any currency into any other payment method in any currency anywhere in the world. And crypto is just a clearing layer. That's the killer app for global commerce right there. And it always has been. And the frustration for me is, like, I've been talking about this for the past 10 years. Like, everyone, this is the killer app for crypto right here. Clearing. And Tether is doing it now with Tether. Right? Tether's becoming central pair for all of these things.
Do you think that Tether, like, has kind of usurped Bitcoin's role in these peer-to-peer trades, like, because of its stability, that it's not as volatile? Like, if you get Bitcoin and then it drops, like, 30% or something, and you're in Africa and you only make, like, you know, a couple hundred bucks a month or something like that, like, that's a significant hit financially. Whereas like Tether is like stable, even though it's inflationary, it loses value. It's not as good as Bitcoin. It's basically fiat. Like, is that why Tether has kind of been eating Bitcoin's lunch in these peer-to-peer trades? Or
absolutely. Absolutely. It's exactly what's happened. Tether's usurped Bitcoin as a medium of exchange. Tether's now the freedom money. But Tether's not permissionless like Bitcoin. It's not just because of the lack of volatility. Our African traders will deal with the volatility of Bitcoin because they love Bitcoin. They understand what freedom money is. If you wanted that, that's how we had been selling it to them for the past 10 years. Now I just seem like a useful idiot. Sadly, because fees, man. What's worse than the volatility is the fees. Traders are messaging me like, Ray, you criminal. You want me to pay $30 to spend $30, you fucking scammer? I'm like, bro, number one, the actual miner fee right now is $100. And I'm subsidizing this for you. I'm not a scammer. This is the actual network fee. They don't understand what I'm saying. They're like, how the fuck could it be this expensive? Then I turn around and I say on Twitter, hey, you know, we're failing our mandate here. These poor folks can't send. And then I get, ha ha ha, have fun staying poor, shitcoiner, try harder. Bitcoin is not for everyone. It's just a store of value. Shut the fuck up. And this is where we're at.
That's crazy. So what are they doing, like, in the face of these high fees? Like, are they switching to Lightning, or are they just switching to, like, a different crypto altogether, like Litecoin or Bitcoin Cash or something?
They're just using Tether, bro. They're just using Tether. No one's using Lightning. Is a joke, bro. I'm sorry. It doesn't work for as a retail solution at all. If anything, Lightning does make sense as, like, a hawala network between two biggest traders. They just want instant clearing between each other. But even that's hard to do. Bullshit, seeds, and this and that. We have to talk to each exchange, the channels opened up between us, and it's like, oh my God, could you have designed a worse system to handicap Bitcoin as an exchange? So people say, like, when I'm talking about that, they have no idea what's going on. They've never actually tried to use this or never stepped into the shoes of anyone to pull this out. Lightning's not happening for any of this stuff, though. In fact, all the OG developers were giving up on that shit. I'm the only one still trying to build there. But when I warn people about this, like, you're an idiot. Lightning exists. Use Lightning. Use Aqua Wallet. So now we're going to go back to wallets, centralized, federated networks. We're just going back to step one, and it's like, no one gets it. Like, everyone has literally been fed a crock of lies, and none of it makes any sense to what's actually happening on the ground. No one's using that shit. Ain't no one got no time for that, bro. They were sold a lie by a useful idiot, me, and I'm trying to correct the situation, and man, just nothing but resistance, bro. It's quite a long.
Yeah, you can't please everybody, Ray. Like, by trying to help the people in the global south, you're getting opposition from the Bitcoin community itself, and then,
which is just a bunch of white
try to please
West,
Bitcoiners,
honestly.
Yeah,
I don't even care about pleasing Bitcoiners anymore. I really do not give a fuck. Like, who gives a fuck about a bunch of Westerners who need another asset class? Like, the billionaires like Michael Saylor don't need another fancy asset class. They literally just lured us in the promise of money. Bitcoin has no future in the West. I'll tell you that right now. All of these regulators can follow after America's example. Europeans, even the Arabs are following. So Bitcoin has no future in the West. It's a massive overregulation and criminalized persecution. And Bitcoin is too expensive to be used as a medium of exchange in the global South. But what is Bitcoin exactly?
I mean, that's the million-dollar question, right? Like, it's the way I see it, it's becoming just like a commodity, like a digital commodity, like trading like oil futures or something like that. Like, people aren't in the West using it for peer-to-peer commerce at all. Everybody just hodls it. Bitcoiners will give you shit if you try to spend your Bitcoin. They'll tell you you should have hodled. You're stupid for spending it. And you know, like, I came into
shitcoiner.
Yeah, exactly. Like, oh, you can't afford the fees on Bitcoin? Well, you better not use something else or else you're a shitcoiner. Yeah, to me, that's completely retarded. And then I came into Bitcoin pretty early, Ray, when people actually used Bitcoin, where, like, nobody was thinking about hodling it for long term, really. There might have been a few people, but most people were trying to use it to transact outside of the banking system. People were trying to move their economic activity over to Bitcoin to get out of the banking system. And I've seen that kind of do like 180 degree reversal over the last like 10 years. Would
exactly.
You agree?
100%. We see it get co-opted right before our very eyes into just this little pet rock, kind of like NVIDIA, but not going up as fast. And hey, that's it. You just take it as it is. Don't complain. And the worst thing is, like, you know, when you echo the sentiments of people in Africa and the global south, and you tell them, hey, you know, a lot of us are kind of resentful. You bought this Bitcoin under 5,000. Now it's 60,000. And you're saying maybe it'll go up 100,000. And they feel like you guys got in early and want us to hold your heavy ass bags. There's more alpha for us in other places. We can't even use this thing as a medium of exchange, which is really what we need. Like, that's what Global South needs, medium of exchange. It's not a store of value. You know, that they need a medium. It's the biggest problem in the world is financial apartheid. I keep saying this and just keep bringing back the same dull talking. And, you know, they have no argument, none whatsoever. It's complete garbage. But then, you know, they do the same things that, you know, these quantum physicists do. When you question basic observable reality, you pick up to them and say, oh, you know, the math proves I'm right. They'll, you know, pull out their little sweet chalk, write some gibberish on the chalkboard and say, hey, look, it's madness. And the Bitcoiners do the same thing. Unit bias, three flames. But what the fuck are you talking about, man? You're putting out all this technical gobbledygook. I know, doing all these mental gymnastics. These are simple problems, man. A Girl Scout selling lemonade on the street, no economics, and any of these fucking clowns. This is where we're at, bro. It's a complete shit show.
So, like, in the absence of using Bitcoin, what other coins besides Tether are people turning to? Are people using things like Litecoin or like Monero or Bitcoin Cash or like some of these other? Even like Ethereum, ERC-20 tokens, DAI, like stablecoins.
Definitely not Ethereum. And Solana is just for gambling, honestly. I see more of is people are turning to Monero and Bitcoin Cash. Those two communities are growing pretty quick, actually. Litecoin, I heard something about that too, Nano, but I'm not sure how much it's wrong. Monero and Bitcoin Cash are definitely catching on.
Yeah, see, that basically backs up what you're saying, like 100%. People are looking for instant, fast, cheap transactions as a medium of exchange rather than they're not looking for like an investment.
Does. Exactly. That's what Tether, that's the killer app for 80% of the world. Really, 90%. It's not just the underbanked and unbanked that have a problem with medium exchange. You know who has a huge problem with medium exchange? The overbanked. People with 5, 10, 10 different bank accounts. All these businesses. I was talking to one guy. Dude sells caviar. And, you know, I started talking to him about his issues with his banks, and man, he went off for an hour and a half. And I just got a, you know, a wire in for $50,000. This guy just wanted to buy some whatever, yellowfin caviar. The bank, you know, sent me a letter, locked my whole account down. Were threatening to put me on a list. And I'm like, and I had to send in, he literally spent a week. You know, paid thousands of legal fees, tens of, just to get his bank accounts opened up again. So he got a $50,000 wire for some caviar, as if he's a criminal. The overbanked also have a tremendous problem with medium exchange. It is the reason that the value of our money keeps going down, you know, besides all the debt-based inflation, is the fact that money just isn't liquid anymore. It doesn't flow. Even for legitimate businesses, especially across borders. This is really the biggest problem in the world. Every other problem is minuscule, even in the West, compared to that. But yet, we're supposed to believe that store of value is the killer aspect. And we're supposed to abandon the original mandate and promise of freedom money. Because, you know, all of these fucking meme garbage, troll, cultist nonsense, I've never seen anything like it. If people don't understand what's going on by now, I'm sorry to say, but you're dumb. You're just fucking dumb. Just so, you know, most people can't figure out a damn thing. The collective IQ of the Bitcoiners has dropped by like 99.9%. It's horrible, bro. I've been here since 2011. And what I'm seeing right now is just devastating. I have never seen this level of unrepentant stupid. And they actually think they're intelligent. And I'm just like, man, I have to step out of that, bro. I don't care what happens to the West anymore. I'm just trying to deliver the global South. I'm going to support whatever currency token project does that job.
Yeah, like the thing that's the most incredible to me is you have like these Bitcoiners that are cheering, you know, like bankers being able to custody Bitcoin, or like the ETFs, or like, you know, regulators going after a project that's not Bitcoin, or, you know, like just these statist cheerleaders that are just cheering for their own downfall, and they're too stupid to even realize what they're cheering for. Like,
I mean, that's the thing. These influencers, yeah, most of them are stupid track. You know, most of these Bitcoin influencers, most of these clowns were just waiting tables before Bitcoin. Now they're coming out, and Bitcoin is just about podcasts now. That's what everyone's about. Everyone has drunk the Kool-Aid. They have literally woven a tapestry of stupidity and this cult. And everyone is just following along, not knowing it will lead to the eventual downfall, because most of these people, some of them understand what's going on. They don't care. They're just like, hey, as long as I'm a bit better off than everyone else, I'm cool. What they don't understand is that these central bankers, the only people that they treat worse than their enemies are their friends. They're useful idiots. We get punished and humiliated in the end. And that end is coming far sooner than we can.
I want to ask you, you were in Nigeria when they launched the CBDC, correct?
Yeah.
Like, what did you see on the ground firsthand? Like, with that launch, with them trying to stop people from being able to take cash out of the ATMs to force them into the CBDC, how it kind of failed. Like, what was your experience while you were there?
Oh, it didn't kind of fail, bro. It failed royally. The Nigerians said, fuck this. They said, we're not touching this. And they just ignored it. They knew what was going on. Nigerians are not dumb. They are extremely intelligent. They are very keen, very spiritually aware. Much smarter than people in the West, bro. Especially us Americans. We're the dumbest, most propagandized, brainwashed morons on earth, especially the boomers. They have to be the stupidest generation God has ever created.
I can't say you're wrong, man.
Sadly, I'm right about everything, bro. I've been batting a thousand since the very beginning of this industry. I'm literally the guy that sees everything, and again, not because I'm some genius. I am a visionary. Why am I a visionary? Why do I see so much? Because I actually go to the streets, man. It's ironic. If you really want the vision of the future, it's not about sitting in your ivory tower and looking down on everything. It's about getting down on the streets with everyone else and respecting their opinion and, you know, treating their problem with a healthy serving of empathy and respect. That's why I'm a visionary. And it's people like me that are number one enemy right now. These maxi trolls came at me with a vengeance, bro. And I destroyed them. Oh my God, did I ravage them, bro. It got so bad. They were so stupid. It was so easy. I had to troll myself. I was making memes on myself just to help them out. I messaged Adam back. I'm like, yo, bro, instead of paying these motherfuckers, pay me. I'm doing a better job of trolling myself than they are. Of course, he denied it. Oh, they don't work for me, Ray. You're just talking to some few people. Don't know. Yeah, right. Sherman, man. We ain't stupid over here, bro.
So with the P2P trading in Nigeria, like they chose to use like Tether and Bitcoin, I guess, instead of the CBDC, because obviously they're trying to escape the Naira if it's losing 5% a day. Like, who holds Naira? Like, nobody, right?
No one wants to hold Naira, bro. They're really not interested at all. In fact, it was an interesting experiment in 2019. Nigeria and a few other nations in Western Africa attempted to launch the ECO, which is a Western African currency. And what happened? It got shot down. The French shot it down. No, we don't like that. And the Americans backed them up. They don't want anyone in Africa being able to trade outside of their country. And a Western African pan-regional currency would have wrecked their whole system up. It would have united Nigeria, Togo, Benin, Ivory Coast, Cameroon altogether, and that would have been a massive economy of over, what, 300 million people? Shot it down. Yeah. Gaddafi tried to launch an African dinar for all of Africans to use, backed up by gold. We saw what happened to him.
Yeah, they killed him fight on TV.
He killed him. Yeah, man. That, bro, 60 African presidents have been killed within my lifetime. 60 assassinated.
It's a lot, man. Yeah, that's all. That's more than one per country if there's 54 countries currently in Africa.
Oh, yeah. They take down multiples, man. I mean, some of those folks be getting rowdy. They go down. And then they just say, oh, well, the Africans are corrupt.
Some of them were as recent as the pandemic as well. Do you remember, like, there was a couple of African leaders that didn't want to...
Yeah. Magafuli stood up to them like a lion. He was like, oh, yeah. COVID, we cured it with prayer. Snicker, snicker. And then you hear, oh, he just died of COVID. What happened there? I don't know, but it definitely wasn't natural. He did not die of COVID. But they sniped that man because he was doing a lot of good for his country, immense good. The more they shit on an African leader or any leader, the more he's demonized and vilified, the more he did for this people. And that's why there's corrupt leaders in Africa. Because you either take the penthouse in Miami or the gun. Which are you going to take?
I mean, that's like, I live here in Colombia, right? And like Pablo Escobar, the famous drug cartel guy, was famous for giving people the choice of lead or silver, right? Which was basically the bullet or the bribe. And it seems like Africa is like a matter of policy has been run like that for a long, long time.
Yeah, by gangsters, bro. I mean, Pablo Escobar and El Chapo, whatever, these guys are like kindergarteners, man. They're to the Western mafia that has literally been terrorizing, extorting, and enslaving 80% of humanity. For the past 70 years, it's been in hyper overdrive. And now we all see it. I see it clearly. I tell everyone this. I'm telling you this. I repeat the same thing on the news, the same thing in the universities. Why? Because I want them to understand how we got to this position. Important is once they understand, oh, wow, it's not just because. It's not because we're lazy or low IQ. It's because we are literally being undermined in every possible way, across every possible vector, consistently, ceaselessly, and ruthlessly by this external mafia. And they want us to think that we're just dumb, and crawled out of the jungles a couple of years ago. That's what we're dealing with. It is literally the biggest story in the world. It's what everyone should be talking about, especially Bitcoiners. But no, they're just celebrating every time some billionaire buys or talks about Bitcoin. What has become of us, sir? Truly.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I ask myself that, especially like when I see them cheerleading politicians. Like a week or two ago, like Trump came out and said, oh, I'm going to like change the rules for crypto. And everybody's like behind Trump now. And like, I have zero faith in any politician, like any politician. Is not going to get to their position of power by being an honest, moral person. They're going to get there through corruption, chicanery, bribery. You know, basically the scummiest people on earth are the people that are running the world right now. So for me to see other Bitcoiners just cheerlead these scumbag politicians because they mention Bitcoin, it's just so pathetic in my eyes.
It really is. I mean, they did the same thing with that guy in Argentina, and he's a complete clown, you know, status.
Oh, yeah, Malay.
This guy is a fucking clown, bro. They literally just got the biggest clown they could get put up there. He said some shit. He's just an actor. Now there's Zelensky, and everyone fell for, oh, you say you like Bitcoin. We like him, too. You dumb fucks, man. It's just, we're dealing, it's really a battle against ignorance, stupidity, and cowardice. And of all those people.
And greed.
Yeah, greed, of course. Yeah, greed's up there for sure, bro. You know, the cowardice part, I understand, honestly, because a lot of people are looking at the situation like, man, there's no way they can let us control the money. These guys will come after us, especially after, you know, the latest announcement. You know, you're all potential criminals. But, man. You know, it's the other people, the stupid ones that really piss me off. Like, how can you be that dumb? You're a grown man. You don't see what's going on here. All these people got into Bitcoin because of the high price. It literally is the price is working against us more than anything else. And at any time these bankers choose, they can choose to collapse the whole thing. And if Bitcoin is not being used as a medium of exchange and they decide to collapse the whole thing with a mountain of FUD, and just a mountain of paper shorts, what exactly will raise the price back up again?
Yeah, I mean, there would be no independent price discovery. You're right. They whatever price they say, and then if they have, you know, hundreds of paper Bitcoin for every Bitcoin, they can totally just dump it down to zero.
Exactly. And that's exactly what they're going to do. They're going to pick it, do it at a time that they're choosing. And they're going to corral all of us into a CBDC. And all these number go up morons will literally be there left holding these massive bags that could be worth possibly nothing. I mean, they can do whatever they want, but there's no price discovery. Ultimately, look, independent price discovery. And ultimately, like you just nailed it. I've been talking about price discovery for a while. For me, here's what success looks like. There is a people-powered index for everything, meaning every currency to the dollar, you know, gold, silver, commodities to the dollar, all calculated algorithmically by all these peer-to-peer trades. That's what CIRCUIT is meant to do. Once we can take back control of price discovery, or at least there's another source, like an honest street price backed up by math and real peer-to-peer trades, it's going to take away the biggest weapon these central bankers have, which is them lording over price discovery. Once we get to that, I will officiate their victory. But guess what? Just as we have taken a massive step back from that, 15 years of progress on freedom money has been lost. And now we're just scrambling around. Oh, here's Lightning. Oh, here's Apple Wallet. Oh, here's the Cashew and Teddy Man. If we're so stupid and so weak that we gave up the battle on the L1, with all this extra complexity over the neck, all they need to do is just hold us off for the next another 6 years. And then that's it. They will officially lock down the matrix control and corral all of us in CBCs. And that's, again, where the true morons will rise up and say, oh, Ray, be patient. This thing will take time. No, you stupid fucks. You've only got 6 years. WEF keeps throwing around the number 2030. You should take that seriously if you have a brain. Because they're basically broadcasting to you, hey, we're going to lock it down by 2030. They're telling you. Now, they don't always make, before it was 2016 for their new world order, but they have to push it back because they encounter some resistance, mostly from Russia and China. So they're not these moronic Bitcoiners. And they, my whole mission is that, man, they do not get what they want. I stand against them. I stand against them ideologically and spiritually. I have enough money to retire right now for the rest of my life. I'm not here for the money. My business. No one's does not depend on low fees, actually. It actually, high fees on the blockchain make our service a lot more exciting because enticing because the more people can send, the more expensive the blockchain is, the more people will just stay internally in our ecosystem, use our internal wallet, and just do trades, and not have to send it out. So we become like a utopia or like a safe harbor for these people. So high blockchain fees actually help our markets.
Okay, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Like if they don't have to go off the platform, they're saving on fees, and then you're also earning more because they're transacting within the platform, and you're earning fees, right?
Exactly. So it's in my best interest. Hey, keep the fees high. More users for me. Let them live on no one's and stay within my platform and I'll make tons of money. Ha 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 ha. But no.
But you're smart enough to see that that's stupid.
Yeah, that's going to fuck us all in the end. Okay, Ray's doing all right. He's got a nice car. He eats well. He's got a bed to sleep in. But man, I'm not here. I didn't do all this to be just a little bit better off than everyone else and watch the whole world burn around me. That's not what I got into this game. That's not what I signed up for. It's not cool with me. I'm here to fight it out so that everyone wins, everyone eats. And if people aren't on that vibe, and very few people are, bro, then they're not my friends. I don't respect them. I don't want an army of toadies. I would take one lion over an army of fools any day, bro.
Yeah. I agree, and I respect you for being principled enough to stick to your principles and you know, make these kind of decisions, man, like for real, because I've seen some of the most like hardcore like cypherpunk Bitcoiners just sell out completely now that Bitcoin's like almost $70,000. Like it's pathetic in my opinion. So like for you to invest your time, effort and energy into trying to benefit the world rather than enrich yourself is very, very respectable. Would you mind telling us about CivKit? I know you're working on CivKit, which is going to be a next level, like peer-to-peer platform. Like, what are you guys doing with CivKit?
You know, CivKit is not a platform, just a protocol. The platform is no one's. It's brand, okay. It's a platform. I see no one's. It's the world's first decentralized peer-to-peer republic. And I'm aiming for it to be the world's first successful network. See, Facebook tried to do it with Libre. They got shot down. Binance was basically there. Then what happened? The man came in and said, we're not going to let this yellow boy become a trillionaire. Fuck him. Now he's in jail. Now Binance is a U.S. compliance monitor. He's the boss. Now Africans can't trade with other Africans. So they nipped that one. And the Bitcoiners celebrated. So now it's between what? Telegram, X, Tether is also, I think they're going to try to create some kind of, cobble together some kind of network state. And no one's. And I'm sitting here thinking, man, I'm up against these giants, all this money, all these resources. Here's little trying to actually make this network safe thing stick. But what do I have to build? Yeah, I've got the trust of the people of the Global South and God on my side. Take that for sure. That's why I'm going to win. But, you know, no one's is, okay, it's a peer-to-peer marketplace. It's a universal wallet. Those are the three core elements to create a true network state. It's that kind of WeChat did it in China, but it's not really it. It's a network state that belongs to the nation state, so it doesn't qualify. Elon Musk is not going to do it. It's one of their charges. The Pond ecosystem is really good, it looks like. I don't know if Telegram will pull this off. They started as a messenger and say, hey, all our business is coming from these OTC chat. Let's get into that. Now they're actually coming to us and saying, hey, can you help us with our peer-to-peer marketplace? Get your liquidity. And I'm like, sure, I'll help you out. It might become a giant. You need us up later, but it'll help out the ecosystem. But look, I don't play on the defense. I play on the offense. So for no one to actually succeed and thrive, it's not safe fast. It has to decentralize as soon as possible. This safe season. Try to keep all the money on the table for himself, all the power for himself. That shit doesn't work against this dragon at the head off of anyone, no matter how much money they have. You know, even a good-sized military can't see. You got to have aircraft carriers and nukes, homie. So what am I going to pull out of my hat? Not CivKit. CivKit is something I'm funding myself. It's basically civilization that it can. What does civilization need to be? I already thought of a question. Every single village, they start off, what do they got? Okay, they got a source of water. Okay, great. But what are the two structures that the humans build, curious creatures that they are? They build a temple, and they build a marketplace. And those are the two pillars of every village. I'm not going to touch the temple part. I've got my own vision. I've got your vision. That. But the marketplace support, that is really the crux of governance. It's civilization. 99% of governance involves money. So it's all about the marketplace. We need a peer-to-peer marketplace that is borderless and truly permissionless. That's what CivKit is. It's an L3, not an L2, it's an L3 on Bitcoin. What the future holds for CivKit, I don't know. It might turn it to an L1, I don't know. Who knows? But right now it's an L3 on it. And it's a marketplace, which is essentially, okay, three things. It's a ledger, which is Bitcoin, Lightning. It's a order book like Phrase List, and it's a payment with condition in escrow. It's powered by Bitcoin Script. The order book is powered by Nostr. We use Tor, you know, so we use the best anonymous technologies out there. And CivKit comes up e-privacy. And anyone can set up their own marketplace as easy as setting up their own blog, and they'll be able to earn off the escrow tools. It can't stop anyone from trading with anyone else. If some OFAC Nations guys want to do it, set up their own CivKit node for trading within their country, they can. If they want to trade with another nation on the naughty list, they can. It essentially, you know, no one's will have a competitor. Anyone can build a competitor to no one's peer-to-peer marketplace, which is great. I'm trying to help people steal my idea, and I will build on it as well. Now, as an American citizen, there are limits to what I can do, but there's no limits to what other people. And that's what I want. Now, CivKit is a civilization toolkit. I even call it a marketplace toolkit for a reason. Because in order to have a marketplace scale, there's three ancillary services that are essentially civilization-grade services, right? Like proper governance services, like number one, you need reputation. Who are you going to know what to trade with? Who are you going to allow to list their offers? You need reputation. The reputation has to be a web of trust system that factors in everyone's reputation without craft. And to do it right, you're also going to need a system of universal decentralized ID. But KYC doesn't work, so how about KYP or your peer? That's a part of it too. The second ancillary service you're going to need is a court system. What happens in the case of a dispute and a trade? You need a judge, an impartial truth arbitrator to come in, an oracle, and a ward. No one's going to use this thing unless there's recourse. It doesn't matter if it's $10 million or $10. You need to have that in. That's hard. Building a decentralized court system is not child's play. It's actually harder than Bitcoin itself.
Yeah, I was going to ask you how you guys are managing that, because with like no one's as it stands right now, it's a centralized peer-to-peer trading place. You obviously have people that you employ or like community members to do the arbitration. But like if you're doing this in a decentralized way, like who's going to moderate the disputes?
Well, you're going to need an order book of truth oracles where people up there can put up their ads and say, hey, I'll be your moderator. You know, this is who I am. I've done, here's my reputation score. Here's the languages I speak. Here's the payment methods I specialize. Here's the fee I charge, $5, 10 basis points, or whatever. I've never lost an appeal, etc. And you're going to need to actually make that system work in a centralized manner, which is also extremely hard, but I've done it in a centralized way twice. So I'm pretty much the only one qualified to do it in a decentralized way since I've actually done it on the ground. No, I would feel theory over here. So the centralized court system is hard, bro. It's even harder than Bitcoin, but we're going to do that too, because the world needs that. And that'll be another huge source of revenue for a lot of people too. It's like, hey, if you're a notary or a lawyer, put up your ad here and be a truth oracle. You can make money like that. So it's another industry. In fact, companies can set up their own truth oracle dispute moderator setups as well. A company in Sweden, that's all they do is discrete moderation for e-commerce. Claire and I believe they're both. So that's going to be another massive business that we're going to have to build on there. Decentralized judges. Yikes. As if the marketplace wasn't hard enough, you need to build a court system too. But that's why it's CivKit. And then you need minting. You need people to create their own form of internal e-cash. So instead of just Tether out there, why don't you let anyone into stablecoin? Create their own stable coin, and it should be backed up by a hybrid of things. For example, be backed up by Bitcoin, it can be backed up by Tether. You could build a route and back it up with, T-bills of whatever nations you so choose. In fact, you could, instead of use different models for the crypto collateralization, use a MakerDAO model, which collateralized at 150%. You could use Delta neutral contracts. You could use the two perpetual swaps contracts out there, like the NACA dollar that Arthur Hayes proposed, like some people, stable sats, Deloitte Money's doing it like that. There's a lot of different factors, options there.
Yeah.
The deeper I go down the field, the more I realize we need these three systems. We need not just a marketplace, but we need reputation, you need the courts, and you need the minting. And that's why it's CivKit. And no one's will build on it first. And I hope everyone comes and builds on it. And I hope everyone shamelessly steals my idea. I'll help them. Because that's the only way we're going to lose. I'm trying to stay ahead of the dragon, brother. That's all I'm trying to do. Even if it means cannibalizing my own business. I really did not want to come out of retirement. But I saw what was happening. I'm like, man, Global South is still waiting for this new global financial architecture. And none of these fucking clowns are going to do shit. So, man. Here I am, back at it again.
Well, I'm sure many, many people appreciate your effort in trying to democratize trade, especially in a place like Africa where there's financial apartheid, which has like each country siloed off and the people are unable to trade. With no ones, I know you're a Bitcoiner. You're focusing mostly on Bitcoin, but will you be implementing like other coins? Like I know, like on Noones, you guys just added Monero recently. Like with CivKit, will you be adding like all these other currencies that are on Noones as well?
Man, yeah, I'm opening up the whole playing field. I'm opening up every damn thing. The floor is open right now. I will let the market decide. I don't care what the Bitcoin maxi focus clowns say. Every day I got 100 of these clowns calling me a shitcoiner when all I do is support what Bitcoin, Tether, and Monero is a payment method. So fuck them, bro. I'll add fucking Scooby-Doo coin on there just to fuck with them.
Amazing. I talked to Nicholas Gregory from Mercury Layer. He's working with you on CivKit, and he had hinted that CivKit is coming out in the very, very near future. Can you shed some light on when people can expect like a rudimentary version of CivKit to start playing around with?
Yeah, it would have been ready last month. We went back and we rewrote the escrow code. So, you know, it has to be super secure. Like, we went through several iterations of that. So we're trying to do this thing right there. So it could happen in the next month, you know, really within a week, we should have a version of it. It's probably another 2 weeks after that, but hey, we got to do this right. I want to put out something that works. I want to put out a movie for it, best of web apps that anyone can use. And I want people to just go. I want the traction to stop. If CivKit doesn't work, man, we're fucked. I'm not tooting my own horn here and saying, you know, I'm the savior of humanity here, but I don't see anyone else with their heart in the right place. That it's not just motivated by money. That's spiritual acumen to understand what the hell is going on around us right now. To adjust, everyone's just too dumb. Some of the most intelligent people in the world, this industry, but they're dumber than dog shit, bro. Because they have no spiritual vision whatsoever. They are completely spiritually blind. That's why they're so fucking stupid. Literally, I'm the smartest guy in this whole place, not because I'm the most intelligent. Just because my spiritual eye is open and I have my heart in the right place. It's sad that that's so rare, right?
Yeah, it is. And, like, in my opinion, I believe, like, the cultist, like, stereotype of Bitcoiners and Bitcoin maxis being cultists is, in a way, like, literally true, because Bitcoin has kind of become like an idol, like for idolatry for atheist exactly. people that don't exactly. believe in like a creator or like a higher power. They put in disgusting. Bitcoin it's in the disgusting. Position of the creator.
That is the most disgusting. When I see people going off like Max Kaiser, like I thought he's a smart dude. He's like, oh, Bitcoin's God, man. Shut the fuck up. You are going to bring the wrath of God down upon us all. We will all be humiliated. This is what is going to happen once you start saying shit like that. Man, God does not like that, bro. People, they think
yeah, it's
God
like
is
a digital broke. Golden calf.
It really is, bro. They've gone that down that path, man. I feel like I'm Moses up in here trying to slap these dumb motherfuckers up, but they won't listen. I'm coming back. I'm like, bro, look, Ten Commandments, white paper, peer-to-peer electronic cash. Oh, you're Roger Burr. Why don't you get into BSV? You stupid fucks, man. Like, what am I going to do with these people, bro? It's just, you can't slap them hard enough, bro, because there's no brains or sense for them to come to. But they're just dumb, bro. IQ be low, and spiritually, they're completely gone. You can't do anything with that. There's no future for freedom money in the West. The West is completely fake, bro. You did the right thing by going to Colombia. You should stay there. I will come visit you there, brother. Inshallah. We'll take the Colombians, take them to the max, bro. They're strong peoples that still believe in God. All the Latinos are. Especially the Colombians.
Yeah, and there's lots of parallels between, like, Africa and, like, Colombia, or not just Colombia, all of South America, because, like, there's the similar problems with trades between nations. There's the similar problem with, like, inflationary currency. There's a similar problem with people paying for suppliers to send them goods and services. Like, if you want to order a shipping container full of, like, sneakers here, just like in Africa, the majority of people are doing that via Tether, like, here in Colombia as well. So, like, there's a ton of parallels, like, between Africa and South America. So, like, whenever you want to come out here, man, just let me know and we'll meet up for sure.
Yeah, definitely, bro. There's tons of corridors between Africa and Latin America and Southeast Asia and CIA.
Imagine the trade that could happen between South America and Africa if you could just lift the wall that's restricting it.
Yeah, bro, it'd be insane. Like, you know, Latin American trade is at 30%. Even that number's too low. It's probably less than 10%. Consider what happens in Latin America and Africa. They're already trading each other on peer-to-peer. Every day I discover these new trade routes. Like, oh, Dominican Republic to Rwanda? What's going on there? Oh, my God, it's amazing. And that's what happens when you let this cat out of the bag, bro. We're just going to make ourselves rich. All the black, brown, and yellow people. All they need to do is be able to use money. The money that they have to exchange the value of their work. And you can see the amount of work being done explode. What happens when you put, what, 2 billion, 3 billion young people to work who are currently unemployed or underemployed? You're going to have cities like Dubai popping up everywhere. Africa and Latin America and Southeast Asia is going to be a madness. And that's when the dark side knows it's coming. They're literally.
That's also the huge problem is we have all these young people here in Latin America, and I know Africa's the same way, but there's nothing for them to do. There's no opportunities. There's no jobs. That's why they have to, like, learn a trade and, like, employ themselves because there is no employment for them. Like, that's a huge problem.
Yeah, or leave paradise and go to some gray, cold city working for this fake money, working for people that, you know, are going to take their money and go back to your paradise on vacation. Like,
yeah.
How do we get in this situation, man? And we're, like, supposed to be thankful for the opportunity to slave away these people in their shitty ass homes so they can go back and enjoy our paradise. Everything has been literally flipped on its head through the use of money. And we are surrounded by an army of weak, stupid morons. And again, it's just like back in the original, like back before Bitcoin, it's a small crew of people fighting for freedom. Before Bitcoin, it was Ron Paul. I'm sitting here in a car and I've got Ron Paul's campaign manager. It's crazy.
That's awesome. In 2010, yeah. I was a Ron Paul person when I lived in California.
Yeah, I was Ron Paul as well, bro. Now his campaign manager is like my mentor, my wartime conciliary. And we're trying to bring all this together. Bro, like this guy was even Thomas Massey's campaign manager. Bro. Like all of us. Bro, I'm a real freedom fighter. And I'm surrounded by real freedom fighters. And we're all working together to fix this thing. Stay ahead of the beast. Because the beast is here and he's approaching heaven. We've only got 6 years together. So whoever's listening right now, your war chief is asking you to gather behind me. You may have seen these crazy orc memes I was putting out.
Yeah, I did.
And man, like, bro, what can I say, man? Yeah, you could call me a traitor because I left the humans and joined the orcs. Man, but the humans are too weak. I've joined the orcs. Yes, I have, bro. I'm half orc, half hobbit. Someone that's like that, they can go fuck themselves, man. I'm with the orcs, bro. I'm with the freaking super mutants if it was Fallout and the intelligent death claws. Fuck it, bro. I'd even be with the Zerg. Because that's what it's going to take, man. An alliance of orcs, super mutants, and Zerg. Take down this army, bro. Take down this demon. And if I have to go at it like that, then I'll go at it like that, man. I just need lions with me, man. But it's going to be a battle. Few years. You're going to see people go in jail everywhere. Eventually, commands are going to come after me. And it's just a race against time, brother. That's what's happening right now. It is literally the most epic battle there is. And instead of fighting with swords and guns, fists, we're fighting with code. We're fighting with UX. We're fighting with our voices. We're fighting with control of money, compliance, regulation, KYC, AML. We are literally in this like labyrinth that is so, so detailed and so, so deep, and we're all trying to crawl out of it. And instead of the world helping me, you know, I'm helping myself. I've never taken VC money from anyone. Feather's making $6 billion a year. You know, they're not helping me out. I'm not asking anyone for help except for God and the streets. And you know what? Might sound crazy to people listening on this call, but I'm the one that's going to actually do it. All the way through to the end. And I'm always hovering directly over the target. You can think I'm crazy. You can call me a madman. Perhaps I am. Actually, I definitely am. But inshallah, Harry or Rob, it will happen, bro. I will push this through by any means necessary.
Amazing. Well, I commend you and respect you deeply for being a freedom fighter and having integrity and you know, being fully committed to the mission. What you just said about people getting arrested left and right, like, I believe we're about to go into overdrive into that. And like, I, for that reason, I'm super into privacy coins right now. And that's like why, like, this podcast is like focusing on privacy coins, because we need to go dark, man. Like, with the surveillance and like big data, like collection and everything that's happening right now, like, in order for us to survive this fight and weather the storm and be able to succeed, we need to go dark. All of our transactions need to become completely untraceable, untaxable, unextortable, unfreezable, unseizable. And I thought that's what Bitcoin was going to give to us, like, when, you know, Bitcoin was in its early days, but then like the development on the privacy part just kind of was halted, and the developers started focusing on other stuff that was more conducive to number go up. So like, I think in order for us to be successful in this fight, like, we need to adopt these privacy currencies. We need to adopt encrypted chat, you know, protocols like SibKit that are going to allow people to engage in commerce without being surveilled or extorted or stopped. So what you're doing is amazing, man. Like, I really do respect what you've been working on.
Thank you, brother. And if anyone's listening, I need help. Great UX designers. I need great engineers. I need great marketers. I need great product people. These are the people I need. So if you're listening to this, you want to join the good guys, and you want to be on the winning team, you come to us. It's not going to be easy. It'll be a crazy ride. But I promise you, at the end, we're going to be on top, standing on the mansion on the hill, along with all our brothers and sisters in faith, humanity. These psycho clowns that have taken over everything, they're going to disappear into the dustbin of history. So your war chief needs you. Find your way to me. Help me. Thank you, everybody. I love you. I really do.
Well, thank you, Ray, for being so generous with your time. I think that's a perfect way to close out the show. I appreciate you coming on again. And yeah, thank you so much, man.
No problem, brother.